Jeez, I could be doing better, huh?
Did you go last night?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. And, you know, I had that feeling in fourth quarter, just like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
You know, I think everybody in the stadium did, too. Like, it's, we've seen this movie before kind of deal.
Oh, we've seen it a lot, Bill. We've seen it a lot.
Yeah,
man.
So, but I got to tell you that this team has made me more passionate of a fan than I've ever been. I've played the game for 10 years. I've covered it for 12 years, differently than most people, but this team has made me just cheer, jump out of my seat, and then, you know, last night, you know, throw stuff. So, yeah, last night was one of the nights that, you know, I felt like throwing stuff.
We were talking about earlier in the show of you're not a Chiefs fan if you haven't been in attendance for one of these kind of games. Like, that's how you know you're officially in Chiefs kingdom. Like, whether you're like Mahomes had his first, that's a Chiefs moment. That was kind of joking with Brad of, you thought that Mahomes was going to protect you from being a Chiefs fan. Nope, he's a part of this too. That disappointing, man, you should have won that game up 14 with 5 minutes to go against a team you beat the last 9 games, and they found a way to lose. Like, I was literally sitting there on that 2-point conversion. How is he that wide open?
Oh,
I don't
God.
Care if he scores in that scene. I mean, I care if he scores, but like, if he goes up and just makes a play where you got to tip your cap and say the guy beat you, that's one thing.
Yeah.
But anybody listening could have made that play. He was that wide open in the back of the end zone.
Well, it was completely blown coverage, you know.
After a timeout, too, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, you work those combo routes all the time, 2-on-2 with your DBs beside each other and how you're going to play it. That's like your basic stuff you do in the very beginning of training camp, you know?
Yeah.
And you rehearse it and repeat it and repeat it, and it was just blown. They just completely blew it. And it's a head scratch. I mean, like, this guy didn't do enough damage to you the entire game?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a hard one.
How does that miscommunication happen in that scenario? But especially when you look at the play, because I've watched it probably 5 times slow down. The Chiefs have 3 defensive backs in that scenario.
Yeah.
How do the 3 of them, 2 of them run into each other like it's 3 Stooges?
Right.
And then a guy is just wide open in the back of the end zone. Like, how does it get that bad? How do you have that big of a miscommunication in that scenario?
You know, not being on the same page. And as great as the fans are in Kansas City with that noise, when you're trying to make adjustments and talk to each other when that noise is going, when that crowd noise is going, sometimes you can't hear yourself think. So, you know, if that was the case or not, I don't know. But it seems to me, did you see the video of Eric Berry screaming and jumping up and down?
Yeah, when he was talking to Orlando Scandrick on the field, is that what you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it was down near the goal line
in
the first half.
Right, yeah. And so that's the kind of communication that you need to get done back there. And for whatever reason, on the 2-point play, which I thought they had plenty of time to get everything worked out, it just wasn't enough.
It was last night was extremely frustrating, I think, for probably everybody that watched that, if you're a Chiefs fan at all. And I made the mistake of texting a buddy of mine that was at the game, and I said, once they were up 28-14, I'm like, ball game.
Yeah.
He's like, yup, this thing's over. And then Rivers went down and scored. And then they had the 3-and-out. They had the penalty on special teams. Demetrius Harris jumped. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, we're absolutely screwed. Like Philip Rivers is going to go down and score. That's exactly what's going to happen.
There's so many different ways you could look at it. You know, this team, it bothers me. The penalties bother me with this team. You know, to me,
and some of them are really stupid.
Well, yeah, you're right.
Most of them are really stupid.
Yeah, and so that to me, that's one. It goes. It's about discipline, and discipline falls under coaching. Okay, and two, there's a psyche to it about it as well. A lot of times, penalties when you have holding or the false starts, there's no excuse.
Yeah,
for.
I don't think there's
the offside. The same thing, but holding or defensive holding or pass interference, those things are about your footwork and getting out of position. And as soon as you get your feet out of position, you've got to resort to grabbing or using your hands. Same thing with the offensive linemen. You get their angles mixed up. They're down. The first thing they do is they lose their footing or it's not proper. They got to grab and use their hands. So it's about the discipline of your footwork and being able to do there. And sometimes during the course of the game too, you get a little tired. You get a little lazy. When those things set in, that's when a lot of those other holding penalties pop up.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, Bill, I was going to ask you, this is one of the things that I've been thinking about today. We haven't talked about it on the show, but I wanted to ask you about it. At what point, if you're a front 7 guy, your D Ford having a hell of a year, Chris Jones, you know, eight hits on the quarterback. You're Justin Houston. You're those guys. At what point do you guys just get legitimately pissed off at the guys behind you because they can't do their job?
Well, it goes back and forth. I got to tell you that. You know, we would chirp at them sometimes, and they would chirp at us. You know, hey, give us one more second. And they're like, no, you get there a second quicker, okay? Yeah. You know, it goes back and forth.
Can that splinter? I mean, feel like we might be at a spot with that loss last night that we might have some situations.
Well, it's not just that loss last night. I take the season as a whole, and I thought there were spurts where I could see the defense getting a little bit better at things, but the shell of the defense, which is a secondary, it has had its issues all year long. The two guys can get up the field and rush the passer, and Chris Jones come up the middle. They're getting their job done. I played on teams like this too. You know, Art Still with, you know, 17 sacks. Mike Bell with 15 sacks. Yeah. I had eight. You know, we could get after the quarterback, and then there was times when we couldn't stop the run, mm-hmm. too. You know, and this defense here reminds me a little bit of that, that they can get upfield when it's pass time. But, I mean, they got a scout team guy they signed for the Chargers running all over them. You know, whenever he wanted to, at will at times, it seems. So those things, just that gap control defense in the front seven hasn't done what I think it needs to be done. They controlled the clock. They controlled the game, and they put themselves in a great position. Hats off to them, too, because that was a pretty doggone good job, I thought.
I want to ask you this question, Bill. Bill Moss, it's the Hits right now. It is brought to you by Broadway Deli, a mostly Jewish deli for a mostly not Jewish city. It's open in the Crossroad and is the official deli of 610 Sports Radio. How do the miscommunication issues happen at this point in the season? Because it was fairly noticeable.
Yeah.
Like, Eric Berry came in and he's telling Orlando Scandrick where you need to line up. And, like, Eric Berry seemed to have a great understanding of the defense. Makes sense. He's been in this defense for a very long time. How are we at this point of the season and the Chiefs are still having severe miscommunication issues with where guys should line up, where they should be positioned, and all those kind of things? That if we want to talk about improvement for the defense, man, I would say before we start having the conversation about Eric Berry coming back, that needs to be step number one. Everybody on this defense needs to be on the same page, and it's almost Christmas and they're not.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And that can only go back to the responsibility of the players. But the coaches, you know, they have to take a responsibility in this too. You know, that coaching staff has always kind of been a friendly coaching staff, a players' coaching staff. And you know, they give them the freedom. Men, you need to be men. You need to act responsible. And I'll treat you that way until you do something wrong. But sometimes you can't just assume that everybody is as diligent as you are in your preparation. You know, there's a lot of guys, look, a lot of guys go in the meeting room, they'll sit there and yep. The film's on, they're watching the screen, they're looking at the video, but their mind's elsewhere.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, that happens a lot. It happens in almost every classroom across America, right? So why wouldn't it happen in an all-day meeting at Arrowhead? But, and the short week, too, not to make excuses, but the short week, too, you're trying to cram in the new stuff, and then all of a sudden Chargers come out and give you a new wrinkle, a new look, or a new formation that you hadn't seen on film that you're studying. So all those things combined, but it's funny that some of the guys know it, as in Eric Berry, and the others don't.
How much do we think that the game against the Ravens took out of them from a physical standpoint? Like, that was a physical overtime.
That was one of my concerns, man, because that was a brutal game. That was a big, hard-hitting game, and you got to – Mahomes got hit, 15 times or something crazy like that in that game?
No, combined, you can look back and say, a short week, physical game, all those things. But, you know, when you're home, you got to win the games you got to win. And that was one. You don't lose control of a 14-point game in the fourth quarter. You just
– At home.
No, you don't do that.
They didn't have Keenan Allen.
You don't do that.
Yeah.
Right. You don't do that. So, look, they're reeling in it right now. But I got to tell you, honestly – I think it's a blessing in disguise, and let me tell you why. If they had won yesterday and sewed up home field advantage, the last two games wouldn't have meant anything. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you play your guys? Do you rest your guys?
We were kicking that around yesterday.
Okay. And then you have a bye week. So you're telling me you would have 3 weeks that the mind rests and relaxes and thinks, I got no pressure this week. And let me tell you something, playing professional football week in and week out, it's pressure. I mean, you put all the preparation into one game, put all your work in for 1 week to get one result, okay? And that pressure, you only got 16 of them. That's a lot of pressure, and the guys feel it. When you have a week off, it's like a big, week off. You get 3 weeks off with no pressure.
Yeah.
Then what do you have?
Lose your edge.
Right. And with a young team, and even Mahomes, as great as he is, this is his first year, man. You got to keep the edge. You're right.
Right now, we're joined by Bill Moss, former Chiefs defensive lineman. He's in the Missouri Sports Hall of Fame. You and I have had a lot of these conversations over the year when it comes to Bob Sutton and scheme. And your belief is it's on the players to go out there and execute. It's not the scheme that's the problem. But I do feel like if you have certain conversations so many times, at some point we got to have a question about the scheme on the 2-point conversion.
Mm-hmm.
Seemed like a scheme issue to me. Three guys right there, they run into each other, and those issues. At what point is Bob Sutton the problem with the team? Because the parts keep changing. Whether it's you got Marcus Peters, you don't have Marcus Peters. You have whoever on the defense. The one constant with this defense continues to be Bob Sutton. At what point does he become the problem with the defense?
Well, you know, it's things like last night that in this league we'll get a coach fired, but it won't happen with this team. It won't happen with Andy. He's very, very, very loyal to his coaches. Always has been every place he's been. That coaching fraternity is really tight. Look, I'm sure behind closed doors, after they watched the video and checked everything out, there's some words flying around and there's some things that need to change. And hopefully this is a wake-up call for them. But I've always defended the coaches. I always have. And I had some coaches, quite frankly, I played for that weren't very good coaches. They just weren't. They're just a guy, and they wore a hat and a whistle, but they just weren't good coaches or teachers or explained things to you or got the point across. But I always believe if you've got players, they'll play, and that's the thing. If you've got the players, if you go get the players that want to compete down after down after down, they're going to do that. They don't need a coach to tell them to do it. You know, they're going to do it. So I remember when they had Dick Vermeil's defense coordinator, Greg.
Was it Greg Williams or Greg Robinson?
Greg Robinson.
Yeah.
Okay. They just blew him up, right? They lit him up, and it was his fault. And when the players start getting wind of that in the media or the news or social media or all that stuff, that's easy to hang your hat on. Mm. You can hang your hat on, maybe it's a scheme. And what do you mean it's a scheme?
Yeah.
You're lining up here. I've got to beat the man in front of me, and I got to get to the quarterback, or I got to get to the ball carrier, or I have to defend my wide receiver no matter how many seconds I got to cover him, or I got to, all those things. You've got to do that regardless of the scheme. No matter what you're going to do, whatever the scheme is, all 11 players on every single play have a responsibility. So it's either getting done or not done, and that, to me, always falls on the player.
Where I kind of fall with this team, and you've been in this situation, so maybe this is like my just a core definition of coaching to me. Like, let's use the Patriots as the gold standard. I see Belichick time and time again able to elevate parts that maybe they don't have stars defensively. Like, the Patriots don't have a D4. They don't have a Chris Jones. But over time, October, maybe there's some problems. They get it fixed in November. Another problem pops up. We'll fix it. We'll be ready for December. And then come January, defensively, will be adequate enough.
Mm-hmm.
That I kind of see with this defense, man, where is the improvement? That I think more than anything, they've just used sacks to mask a lot of the other problems that they have on this defense. And I just don't know if Bob Sutton is the one to elevate this defense and get certain guys to away. Because all we've ever asked this defense to do is be average. If this defense can be ranked 15th in the NFL, 17th in the NFL, that should be enough.
Yeah.
Man, being ranked 28th in total points is not good enough.
No,
again, last year, you remember, at the end of the season, Bob Sutton kept saying, I need the players. And then they were trying to tell me that Marcus Peters was the problem. Hey, we get rid of him, and we get rid of his attitude, we can improve it. Man, this is the defense you guys asked for. Man, you can't ask to have a better pass rusher than Chris Jones playing at this level right now. Can't ask for a better pass rusher than the way D Ford is right now. You guys chose Kendall Fuller.
Yeah.
Man, I kind of feel like you picked a lot of these parts. You got to be better than 28th overall in total points.
So, there's a bigger picture to that. And you're right. I wholeheartedly believe everything you just said. But there's a bigger picture in the team collectively. And it takes on not just the coaches and not just the players, but it takes on everything. It takes on the general managers, the front office, and the salary cap, and how you use your salary cap. Listen, we gave a ton of money away to players that shouldn't be getting paid the money they're paying.
Anthony Hitchens, Sammy Watkins.
Huh?
Hitchens, Watkins. Stealing money.
Well, how about Eric Fisher? They signed him early. They signed Cuvernay Tardif, okay? I said it. I mean, the Eric Berry story is the greatest story ever, but you don't pay a safety that kind of money. It disrupts your whole team's structure. So when you're paying this for that, you're gonna lose something somewhere else. And what they didn't do during that time period was they didn't fix the middle of the defense. They didn't the two linebackers, they waited way too long to try to find adequate backups for Derek Johnson. And so that's been an issue all year. They're running the ball. We still have gap control problems, you know, and the secondary as well. You know, where you're paying all that money to a safety, who are you going to get?
Yeah. You know, I've thought this for a long time, and I'll throw some names at you. But I think it kind of goes to what you're saying. I mean, to me, it's a multi-level problem when it comes to the defense. The coaching, absolutely. You know, for sure. I think there's part of that. The players, for sure. But I also think when it comes to drafting and developing good defensive players, that's an issue over at One Arrowhead Drive. And, Bill, I'll say that because you had your second-round draft pick, a defensive end, Tano Pastineau, last night. Inactive.
He's giving you nothing.
Inactive.
He hasn't played in, what, 4 or 5 weeks?
Well, he played the week before. He played against the Ravens. He got in the game. But he was inactive last night. A second-round pick. You know, Akemi Olegbe, the guy that got in 2017, not on the team. Leon McQuay, practice squad guy. In 2016, Kavari Russell, third-round pick. Didn't even make it out of camp before they cut him. Eric Murray at safety, underachieving. You know, DJ White, gone. Daddy Nicholas, gone. Steven Nelson. Okay, we're seeing he's maybe a number three, number four corner. He's got to start here. DJ Alexander, gone. Raheem Nunez Rochez, gone. People, and I understand, you want to go after the coach, you want to go after Bob Sutton, you want to go after, I get it. I don't think it's completely on Bob. I think it goes higher than that.
Yeah, it does.
I think it goes higher than that because as successful as they've been when it comes to getting Mahomes and getting the offensive part of this right. They have been equally as bad on the defensive side of the ball of drafting, developing, and coaching the defense.
And so let me tell you why. And it goes back to what C-Dot brought up earlier when he talked about the New England Patriots. New England Patriots know exactly the type of player they want for every defensive position. They know the makeup, the mindset, the athletic abilities. Bill Belichick knows exactly what he's looking for all 11 players on defense. And that's why they don't miss. And that's why they develop them and they get better. We don't have anybody really on that side of the ball that's overseeing any of those things. Mm-hmm. You know, you have an offensive mind for the most part, coaching staff, and they do miraculous things, unbelievable things.
I think Andy just hands it over.
The diagram.
Hands it over to Bob. Cheers.
Well, it's Bob's not the one making the picks.
Yeah.
There's a whole scouting department for
that. Yeah, I'm not talking
about
the picks.
And if they don't have leadership in the scouting department to identify, this is the defense we're running, and this is the type of player I need for this position. If it's like, hey, this guy's a pretty good defensive tackle, and I think maybe he could do this, but can he do the things necessary to fit within your scheme?
Yeah.
Okay? Chris Jones, they landed a great one there.
Phenomenal.
There's no doubt.
Yeah.
I think Nottie's coming on strong, but, you know, he's struggling rookie year so far.
Yeah, I'm not
he's
even judging these rookies yet, man. I'm not even there with those guys.
But – in the secondary, as far as the defensive back position goes, what do you got?
You got Orlando Scandrick.
Yep.
Because you got it wrong on David Amerson when you tried to sign him. Traded Marcus Peters, which I still think was probably the right decision. Kendall Fuller, I think he's been fine this year. But they're getting it wrong, whether it's personnel, coaching, drafting. I think it's a multi-level issue on the defensive side of the ball over there, man.
No,
drives me nuts.
I agree with you.
Drives me nuts.
That's why we're at where we're at right now. You think it's bad now. Wait till you see what's going to happen when you've got all these signings coming up in the next year.
Oh, my goodness. Chris Jones is going to get paid, man.
Yeah.
Bill, one thing I'll fight you on with Barry, because at the core, when it comes to team structure and salary cap, I agree with you. Paying a safety that much money is normally bad for your team. I don't know if it's bad for this team. When I look at the first half impact that Eric Berry had, flying around, making plays, made that play in the box, and then I see what happened in the second half, and we had the conversation about communication and guys not being on the same page. I agree with you, maybe for another team like the Chargers, you might overrate the value of the safety position. I don't know if you can do that with the Chiefs and Eric Berry and his value to this team. That I was like you. I looked at safety as a luxury, not a need for this team. I look at Berry as maybe being one of the eight most important guys when you talk about his impact and how this defense looks so drastically different when he's there and when he's not.
Yeah, and the whole story, too. I mean, can you imagine if you didn't sign him, right? Public outlash would just be horrific. So I get it. But and he is a guy. His leadership ability, I mean, he's a guy that even when he wasn't playing, which is very, very rare, too. Normally when a guy's not playing, if they're injured, there's nobody's listening to him.
They're just MIAs.
They're just there. No, you're no part of this any longer. Hang on, bro. Stand over there, you know? Yeah. Even when he was injured through this entire time, he's been a key focal point of the guys and their mentality and leadership. So, you know, you're right, C-Dot. You have to have him because of the other guys around there that maybe don't personally take the challenge to be as good as Eric Berry wants them to be.
How did he look yesterday in your mind?
I think he looked great. You know, I mean, there was a couple plays. I thought, you know, foot or two behind on some things, but you know that's what happens when you miss 29 games. I said that all along. You just don't come back and everything's great. It takes a lot of time to get back to where you were mentally and physically on the field. I know looking back, it's hindsight. You say, well, what if we put him in? What if he was in there the second half and we won the game?
Yeah.
What if you put him in there the second half
and he got hurt
and we won the game and he tore his Achilles?
Yeah.
You know, we've said, how stupid's that? Why didn't we have him on his pitch count? Why didn't you, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so I get both sides of it, but that's a tough call. And only he knows. I thought it was really interesting when he said that last week he thought he could go, but his spirit told him not to. That was a shocker to me, really. I'm like,
Bill, I've been talking about that all day today.
Really?
And it irritated the hell out of me because, and listen, I've never played professional football. But he said he was physically ready to go last week, and he thought he could have go, but his spirit wasn't ready for it.
Yeah.
And then he said he was also asked in that interview that he doesn't really feel any different physically than he did 3-4 weeks ago. I'm like, you had 14 weeks to get your spirit ready to go, you know? You've had, and if physically you're ready to go 3-4 weeks ago, then why aren't you on the field?
Yeah.
I mean, am I being unreasonable here and being a jerk? And because I have the ultimate respect for what Eric Berry's gone through. But, man, at some point, it's time to put the pads back on and get your ass back out there because your team needs you. If you're physically ready to go, you got 14 weeks to get your head straight.
Well, you're right. But there's also a thing. Now, this guy's been through this is his second Achilles, right?
Yeah.
Total knee surgery, right?
No, one Achilles. I'm sorry, one Achilles.
One Achilles.
DJ had two Achilles. Yeah, Eric Berry had one. Berry had a torn ACL, and then he had a cancer.
Yeah, okay. And when you go through those treatments, cancer, you know,
sure,
ligaments and things and muscles wear down, get a little weaker. Yeah. Maybe that was it. Because here's what happens with injuries. No matter what anybody says, and I'll give you a great example, the quarterback Carr out in the Raiders.
Sure.
When he blew his knee after that, he's not the same quarterback in the pocket.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to sit in the pocket. He doesn't want to stand there and plant and throw and face the pressure. He's not the same guy. And that's part of the reason he's driving John Gruden crazy. He's scared. Mm-hmm. And everybody is tentative. When you go through that, you're tentative in your mind. You're tentative of planting that foot or planting your knee or cutting or is it going to pop again? And all those things go through your mind. And no matter what anyone ever tells you, if you go through those surgeries, it's always a question in your mind. Is it going to go again?
What was your first reaction when you heard that comment, though? Because I kind of interrupted. That was my bad.
Yeah, well, I was kind of like, well, you know, if you weren't ready, then why did you play? Or why only a half? Or if your spirit's right now, why not the whole game? Or if you're ready to go, if you're healthy enough, why couldn't it be the whole game? Yeah, I just thought it was interesting. But when he said it, I thought to myself, man, it tells me he's not really quite sure mentally if he's ready to go put that foot in the ground and explode off it. Because that thing pops again or ruptures again,
it might be done. Might be a career.
Well, yeah, it sure would be.
Yeah.
Without question. And that goes through a player's mind all the time.
I thought he was really good last night. I mean, he got beat deep a couple of times, but he came up and made that great run stop. I think it might have been first or second and goal. And then in that same series is when he was jumping Skandrick's ass to get in the right place too. And I'm like, okay, we got our dude back. You know, because I didn't expect him to be perfect in pass coverage. But I think he, in that opening drive of the game too, he's part of the reason Rivers threw that pick.
Right.
They sent him on a delayed blitz and he got right in his face and Rivers couldn't plant. I thought he looked really good, and that's the other part. You know, I was like, okay, 30 snaps, half, I'm good. And then I heard him talk about it after the game, and I'm like, well, man, if you felt good enough to go in the Ravens game, get your 30 snaps then, come out here, and this team needed you last night.
Well,
and I know it's a quick turnaround, too, so I get that part of it.
The other side of it was, too, on a game like that, just me, myself.
Yeah.
There's no way I'm not going to be on the field.
Yeah.
I don't care if coach says, hey, no, you got your half or you got your 30 snaps or you're good, sit down. If they're coming back, I'm on the field. And he's the guy that can, I would think, make that call,
That's what I think, too.
He could go up to me and say, listen, I don't care. I'm going back in.
Yeah, I think he's in charge of when he's on the field and when he's not, if you ask me. I mean, that guy makes a hell of a lot of money, and players can make that call, right, when you're in that situation?
Yeah, and I wonder what he's thinking now, looking back at it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Right now, we're talking to Bill Moss. He is joining us in studio for the 5 o'clock hour. I want to keep this conversation going because I think the differences that Brad and I had is I don't want any player out there that questions his body and his ability to do things. So if you think it takes you an extra 2 weeks to get that explosive back and make those plays and you need to take an extra 10 days to get on the field mentally, then take those days because the worst thing that can happen is you go out there at 80% and you don't feel comfortable and then you injure yourself and then you can't help us in the playoffs when we really need you. And we'll have a conversation about Patrick Mahomes and this offense. Bill Moss in the studio for the 5 o'clock hour. It's The Drive.
The Drive, presented by Tecate.
Back in, joined by Bill Moss in studio for the 5 o'clock hour, talking Chiefs and Chargers. Anytime something big like that happens yesterday, we got to call in the big guns. So we got our guy, Bill Moss. We were talking about Eric Berry's comments after the game yesterday. He was talking about how he felt a little hesitant to come back and how his spirit wasn't right, but it finally felt right to come out against the Los Angeles Chargers. This is what I was saying earlier, Bill, is I've never had that kind of injury before. So I don't really have, any frame of reference. But I've talked to enough football players that you guys know the mindset that you got to get into to go out there and do it. And I wouldn't want to play alongside anybody in a game like football in which you can severely hurt yourself if you aren't 100% confident in your ability. So if you say that your spirit's not right where you don't feel comfortable enough to go out there, hey, that's fine. You take a week or two. I don't want to now make it seem like the last 2 weeks for the Chiefs have been this do or die. If they lose these games, they can't make the playoffs. We keep saying how it's only about January. It's only about January. So whatever the plan is to keep Eric Berry as healthy and upright as possible for him to be out there whenever they play their first playoff game in Arrowhead, I'm perfectly fine with that being the plan. So I didn't really feel any kind of way about the comments. Brad did. So I was just curious in your perspective of a former NFL player of you've come back from an injury at some point. What was it like to get mentally ready to get back on the field, even if you physically felt like your shoulder or your knee were right enough for you to get back on the field?
It's tough. It's really tough. But, when you're getting paid to do a job, I mean, that's what it comes down to, nuts and bolts. When you're getting paid to do a job and you're physically ready, but mentally you're not, it's when you're getting paid quite substantial amount of money too.
Getting paid well.
The human element sometimes goes away of that stuff with the coaches or maybe front office or maybe ownership. Who knows? But you know what? He's okay, but he doesn't want to go. His spirit? I don't know. I see that. I mean, let's just say, for instance, you had laryngitis and you were out for a while, right? Mm-hmm. You came back, your throat was sore, but it's time to go. You're getting paid $17 million a year. What are your management going to say if you tell them your spirit's not right? Just a question.
No, I mean, that's a fair point. But I guess my thing would be is, how important is the show? Are we talking of
Super Bowl show?
Yeah, are we talking AFC Championship game week where it's the Monday and I say my spirit ain't right and I've been out? That's a different thing. But I know it's disappointing that they lost. We agree that was not make or break for the Kansas City Chiefs.
Could be.
This team can still be the one seed if they take care of business at Seattle. Mm. They can still be the one seed. Everything this team wants to do is still right there in front of them. We were saying that all week. Now that they fight, because I think more than anything is we built it up in our mind. There's no way they lose to the Chargers. Now they lost to the Chargers, and now it's like, man, the sky is falling. It's not falling for the Chiefs.
The only reason I think my concern on that, Bill, is it could be make or break.
Yeah.
And the reason I say that is now you got to go out on the road to Seattle and win, and now you got, and then you got to beat the Raiders at home, which they should be able to do. I mean, you would have given so many guys the chance to rest if you win that game last night, and I guarantee you, if Eric Berry's playing defense last night in the second half, they win that game.
Yeah, I mean, hindsight's always nice, but here's the thing. Here's the big thing that the pink elephant in the room no one wants to talk about, regardless of Eric Berry, whether he was there or not. This offense isn't the same offense without Sammy Watkins and Hunt.
I was just about to ask you that because
they're not. I'm just telling you, I'm watching. They're not the same offense, and the reason is because when they had Hunt and Watkins and Hill, a healthy Hill, and Travis Kelce, there's no possible way you can take care of all those avenues. You can double two, okay, and that's it. And somebody's going to be open. And Mahomes' eyes and the way he sees the field is always going to find the person that's open. But this offense hasn't been the same since Watkins went out. And Hunt. I mean, that's the big thing. And will it get better? Will it get back to that point? Not all the window dressing and not all the gadget plays and not all that stuff. I mean, line up and beat the guy in front of you. And that's what these guys were able to do before.
Because I was asking the question. I asked a question on Tuesday about the Chiefs of, do you still consider the Chiefs offense to be elite? Everybody on the text line is like, you're crazy. You're overreacting. I'm like, I'm not saying the Chiefs offense isn't good anymore. But we know, man, for the first 2 months of the season, you could snap your fingers and this team was scoring 35 points. Mm-hmm. This team was scoring 40 points.
Yep.
That it always kept pressure off the defense that I said all year.
Yeah.
Their best defense was
their offense.
We can score 40 points
yep.
and your offense is not equipped to do it.
That's
even
right.
In 2018, you are not equipped to do it. That now that you've taken 20% away from this offense, that now it's just a good offense, man, a lot of teams can score 28. Hell, the Ravens can score 28. We saw that.
Yep.
Los Angeles can score 28. It's hard to score 40 in the NFL. I don't care how much they've done to make the offense work. That's what's happened to the team is now. Their offense is not 99 Rams. Their offense isn't 98 Vikings. Their offense isn't 07 Patriots. It's just really good. Is that good enough to carry this defense that is clearly deficient? And that's a serious question for the Chiefs right now.
And that's what's yet to be seen. We don't know. I looked at the Rams and saw them kind of fall apart when Kupp went out. When Cooper Kupp went out, they weren't the same Rams offense. They were explosive because they had two dynamic wide receivers, a good tight end, and a running back that'll just beat you up, right? And that's kind of what we had here in Kansas City. So, yeah, it's yet to be seen, but it's something that I have been keeping an eye on for the last 2 weeks, watching it, saying, I don't know. It's just not it. And you're right. Putting up 40 points is a big difference than putting up 28 or 30.
Bill, what's it like in the locker room? And I don't know if you ever went through this or not. I don't know if you did. But you got a player that puts himself in the position that Kareem Hunt did to get kicked off the team. I mean, the Chiefs are rolling offensively. I mean, there's got to be some anger. You know, because, you know, you only got so many cracks at a ring, man.
Right.
I mean, it's got to divide, irritate, bother the locker room or change it somewhat.
Yeah. Well, I believe this. When it happened, first of all, to answer your question, it's a mixed bag of emotions because he was a brother of yours, he was a teammate, and you know him personally, you've eaten with him, slept in hotel rooms with him. You've done everything with this guy for, you know, long periods of time, going through a lot. You know their family. You know his parents. You know his girlfriend. So you feel for the damage that he caused himself. But the other side of it is, you're pissed. And there's a psyche that goes along with it because I thought this was going to be the big thing. I wanted to see how they responded and came out and played. The Ravens, when this all happened, I wanted to see what they could do and what their mindset would be like. Because a lot of times, when you think you've got it all, and there's a stumble, and this offense thought they had it all. They were it.
Yeah.
And there's a stumble. It can take the wind out of your sails a little bit.
And that's why I asked the question, is there any question for the offense? Because everybody today is mad at the defense, and I perfectly understand it. This offense had the ball two times at the end of the game against the Los Angeles Rams. Mahomes threw back-to-back interceptions. We were all mad at the defense, understandably so. In this game, you and I both knew If they punted the ball back to the Los Angeles Chargers, they were going to lose that game. It was obvious that the Chargers were going to go down the field and score, that the Chiefs defense was not going to stop them. This offense goes three and out. Can't get one first down. This offense couldn't even flip field position to make it hard for the Chargers to go down the field. You had three plays, what, negative 5 yards? You got sacked on that play, had to punt the ball back. Are we putting any burden on the offense of all season the offense has carried the defense? This was kind of one of those times, man. The offense just had to look and say, whatever we do, we cannot give the ball back to the Chargers. And the offense just didn't do enough at the end of the game.
Well, you know, Dustin Colquitt's been punting a lot lately, huh? And he didn't for the first how many games?
He's been getting
a lot of work.
You never
saw him. Yeah. You never saw him. He never went on the field. And that's a product of that. So the answer to your question is, yeah, I think there's a little cause for concern here on what the offense is and what they can still be if they can get back to that place that they were a few weeks ago.
What happens to the offensive line? Is it solely based on injuries and now mix and matching in parts? Because I feel like ever since that game against the Cardinals and Chandler Jones, man, we've been having a lot more conversations about Eric Fisher and Schwartz on the right side. Schwartz had a couple of bad penalties and got beat a couple times yesterday.
Yeah, well, I think the offensive line for quite some time has been average to below average. There's really nothing super special there. I thought when they paid all that money to those two guys, I thought it was poor use of salary cap money. And then who are you bringing in? Who are the guys you're bringing in? We're picking up guys that are, you know, first round draft choices, cut here, cut there. Can they play? They haven't impressed me at all at any time in the last 5 years when Andy's here. But I got to tell you, Andy believes you can just line up some guys there and he'll make the magic work with the other parts.
I mean, he likes versatile guys, right? I mean, Zach Fulton was a dude. He brought back Jeff Allen to plug in there. I'm a CDOT, though. I mean, Mahomes' jersey's been getting a hell of a lot dirty.
Right.
The last month or so.
Yeah.
And how much of having Kareem Hunt in that backfield made that offensive line look really good?
A lot. Big. I mean, even last year, he took things that a lot of backs in this league can't do, including the other four on our roster. He made something out of those things. He'd find ways, and then he'd get hit, and he'd still fall for four more yards.
Yeah.
Okay? And then next time he gets up, and then he picks up 6 yards. I mean, that makes a huge difference to not just the offensive line, but the entire offense and how defenses handle that. It's a different deal when you have Kareem Hunt coming downhill at you and getting out in the flat and beating you with catches against the linebackers than it is any of our other running backs. The defense plays it entirely different, and they have to.
Right now, we're talking to Bill Moss for one more segment here on The Drive. Coming up on the other side, we'll talk about the Kendall Fuller injury and what that means for the defense, because their secondary is really banged up. Bill Moss in studio. It's The Drive.
The Drive, presented by Tecate.
Back in on The Drive, Bill Moss in studio for the 5 o'clock hour. Really enjoyed having him in. Talking Chiefs and Chargers. This morning we found out Kendall Fuller had a broken wrist. He is going to have surgery. Have you ever had a broken wrist before? Have you ever played in a cast? Anything like that before?
I've had broken fingers. I got a plate put in my arm. I had to wear a thing over for a lot of years after that. But, yeah, you feel it. Let me tell you, you feel it. That's for sure.
In your medical opinion, do you think that Kendall Fuller will play again this season?
I don't know how bad of a break it is, or a fracture, or a crack, or that's hard to say for me. But
nobody's saying that he's out for the year. That's why we're just curious. I mean, he had surgery this morning, played with a fractured wrist last night.
Yeah.
Must not be too bad, right?
Well, they can.
I can't imagine playing football with a broken wrist.
Me either.
They can cast him up, you know, and think. Well, for those guys too, you know, except for when you're tackling, you're wrapping with your arms, but you're not using your hands a lot. You know, they're not playing a ton of bump and run. They're running.
We know. We see.
Well, you know what? It makes it tough.
It could be possible.
Let me ask you this.
Ain't a whole lot of physical play from the corners on this team.
Is it tough to hold and grab jerseys with a cast on your hand? You know, because I'm hopefully that's the case. You know what I mean?
Is it tough to hold?
Yeah.
No.
To grab jerseys?
So it'll be less penalties?
That's what I'm saying. Like, maybe that'll help. Actually, he's not even the guy that's the problem with that. But, yeah, I give him a hell of a lot of credit. He even had an interception last night with a freaking cast on his hand. You know, that's my kind of dude right there.
That's
showing some stones and going out there and playing.
Yeah, and speaking of the turnovers, too, how about, what have we missed? Two, three other ones? Interceptions?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
I mean, one of them, I can't, I, I think it was Murray. I mean, Phillip Rivers threw it.
Right to him.
You can't get an interception. God gave you a gift, and you let it hit you in the helmet.
Why can't corners catch? Seriously, man. Like, why can't they catch?
They say that. That's why they're on defense, offense.
We clearly know that whenever you're a kid, everybody wants to be on offense. Nobody wants to play defense as a kid.
Uh-uh.
And then they see if you can catch, and they see you can't catch, and the ones that can go to offense, and the ones that can't go to defense.
They line them up early and pop Warner.
Yeah, you're stuck then at that point. Bill, let me ask you this about the game yesterday. I wanted to wait till the end because I didn't want anybody to think I was using it as an excuse. The officiating in the NFL is a serious problem. Like, a legitimate, it's bad.
Look, so I'm down on the sidelines yesterday before the game, okay? And I see the white hat walk by me, right in front of me. Brad's like right where you are.
Mm-hmm.
It's Walt Coleman. And I looked at a buddy of mine and said, oh, bleep, Walt Coleman, this is going to be bad. And he's notorious. I mean, seriously, when he calls a game, there's going to be controversy regardless. They just don't seem to get it right for whatever reason.
Yeah,
I mean, some of those calls were ridiculous.
The one on Dan Sorensen on the holding call on Gates early on was one of the worst calls I've ever seen.
Yeah,
and C-Dot and I are both on the same page. The Chargers got screwed on that helmet to helmet late in the game too. That should have been a penalty. I mean, based on the way they called it,
it should have been. Yeah.
Why is he so bad? Like,
and then they come right back from that, and they call
on Fuller.
A holding in the end zone, right? Pass interference, holding, or what was it?
Yeah, it was a pass interference.
Why?
Bill, the biggest problem I see with the officiating in the NFL is there's no consistency really on anything. Like, I don't know what a catch is. I don't know what helmet to helmet is. I don't know what defensive holding is. I don't know what pass interference is. Like, I'm saying things that happen 15, 20 times in an NFL game. They'll call it one way in the first quarter, different in the second quarter. They won't call anything at the end of the game unless it's the last 2 minutes. Then they'll call everything to help the offense. Like, there's no consistency in how they call anything in the NFL.
Yeah. A lot of that has to do with the crews, too. I mean, they all work together. And when we saw that all-star crew, remember that?
Yeah, great crew. That was amazing.
They never worked together. And that was horrible. That game was horrible. Flags flying everywhere. It's a tough job too. I'm not going to kid you. I went to their training camp and the things they have to do and how they're taught to see stuff. And each umpires are in this room, referees are in this room, side judges here, field judges are over here. I mean, and I went from room to room to room in their seminars and how they're taught to look at certain things is part of the reason, you know. So how many times have you seen an offensive lineman get called for holding when he's blocking his guy good? And the defensive lineman's leg running, and he falls to the ground.
Yeah.
When they saw the playoffs. When they see guys go to the ground, they pull that flag out right away.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty good block most of the time, and it's because the defensive lineman fell. Yeah, so a lot of it is how it's structured, how they're taught to see it. So, yeah, I don't envy them, for sure.
There was somebody on the text line earlier asked, why can't you review penalties? And my initial response was, and I'm just guessing here.
4-hour game?
Well, even longer than that. And that's what I said, too. I mean, it'd be really, really long. The thing that frustrates me about the officiating in the NFL right now, and I don't want this to come off like C-Dot and I both don't agree that the officiating is why the Chiefs lost that game. Couldn't stop anybody. That's the reason why. But you look at roughing the passer earlier in the season. They don't call that anymore.
No.
Clay Matthews makes what looks to be a clean hit.
Right.
And then he gets penalized. The Packers end up, getting a tie in that game against the Vikings? And now how many times do you see, a defensive guy do the exact same thing that Clay Matthews did, and then it doesn't get called anymore?
No.
That's what drives me the crazy. Like, how as a player do you know what to do and what is right if they change the way they call plays in the middle of the season?
Do you remember 3 years ago when they implemented the crown rule with the running back?
Yeah.
Remember the
he wasn't allowed
to lower his head. Remember that? And they called it all preseason. They called it about the first 2 or 3 weeks.
And then they stopped calling it.
Yeah. And you can watch every single game, and a running back is going to lower his head.
Well, Kareem Hunt got fined this year for that.
Elliott just got fined for it this week. So he just got a $28,000 fine for Ezekiel Elliott for doing the exact same thing. And sometimes you say, like, how they're taught. The Daniel Sorensen holding call that he almost got the pick, and then they called. I don't know what official. I don't care what level you're at. I don't know how that's defensive holding in that scenario. I kind of feel like we talk about.
The player did fall, though, right?
Yeah.
That has a lot to do with it.
And we talk about how the rule changes have helped offenses. Man, I feel like a lot of times on third down, their default is call a penalty against the defense to
keep the
to prolong the drive for the offense. I mean, same thing happened for the Chiefs. That, man, again, I'm not saying that the officiating was bad for the Chargers. I'm not saying the officiating was bad for the Chiefs. I'm saying it's bad league-wide, and way too many of these games come down to a questionable holding call that keeps the drive alive to help a team score. That if the NFL is serious about fixing their product, it has to start from within and how these games are officiated.
Well, you know, fixing the product is kind of funny because there's so many things you could go off on that tangent with, right? I mean, talking about the product. But, I get what you're saying. If everybody's doing it the same thing, they're all called the same way, you would know and understand what to expect, and there wouldn't be these calls that are affecting outcomes of games.
Yeah.
And that's the big thing, and especially when they're happening in the fourth quarter, because most of the league is pretty competitive, and they're about the same two or three points, 4 points, 5 points, a touchdown apart. And these calls come out, and it changes games, it changes careers for coaches, it changes records, and teams, they have Super Bowls, and so we've seen it. It's interesting.
That's our guy, Bill Moss. Bill, thanks a lot for coming in today, man. Always
guys,
good
I enjoyed
you.
It, man. Let's do it again.
Have a good weekend.
Absolutely.
If I don't see you, happy holidays.
You got it.
For Brad Fanning, for Dusty Likens, for Bill Moss, coming up after us, it is Bink at Night. Thank you so much for listening. Have a good weekend and join the NFL. It's the Drive.